You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
One of my favorite guests is back here on today's Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow our show on Twitter and on Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me on Twitter at Brendan Kleen 14. I am excited to welcome back Sam Cooper on today's show. He podcasts over at The Timeline with Mike Vigil. He writes at Bright Side of the Sun, and he's one of the smarter Suns guys out there, so I wanted to bring him back during this little hiatus that we find ourselves in to talk about some interesting trends through the first 11 games of the Suns season. So without further ado, let's dive right into that. For those of you who are listening for the first time, go ahead and hit that follow or subscribe button to be right here with us every single day, beginning next Monday when I bring Brandon Duenas, a.k.a. Zona, on Twitter on for our weekly chat. So that'll be fun on Monday. But first, a great conversation with Sam Cooper. Joined now by Sam Cooper of the Timeline podcast, as well as Bright Side of the Sun. Sam, I don't think I have had you on since we were talking about this, debating if it was true, but I do believe that I have not had you on since I returned to hosting this show, so I'm happy to have you back, although I do wish that it was under better circumstances. How'd you enjoy Suns Hawks last night?
Oh, wow. Come on. Yeah, I guess we got to, first of all, thank you for bringing me on. Very happy to be here, Brendan. To address the elephant in the room, I guess that's where we start, right?
Got to.
No Suns games officially until Monday at the very earliest. That's the latest info that we're dealing with right now. I don't really know what to say about it. We were just talking before we started recording officially. I don't think I have anything super new to contribute to this conversation. Do you get to a point though where you start to worry about all these postponements and kind of what it means for the Suns schedule eventually, right? Like if it's going to come back to bite you, if there's going to be a ridiculous number of back-to-backs later on in the season.
NBA basically just didn't even set a guideline for that, right? We don't know what these postponements, right, when they'll take place or if they'll take place. I mean, I think that's still worth putting an if on, you know. I don't know. Obviously
this is one of those
we don't want a season where the teams play different amount of games, but yeah, go ahead.
You're right. That sounds awful. I think this is going to be one of those seasons where you take a look at the strength of schedule stats in particular, looking back on it, and it's just like really, really, really wonky. I will say one thing, you know, I don't think the league has handled having the players' best interest when it comes to safety in mind. I don't think they've handled that well at all. To talk just about the basketball, I guess, for a second though, because we know the league they're not gonna cancel the season.
No.
At worst, if things continue to get worse, they might postpone for 2 or 3 weeks and kind of get everyone back up to a clean slate of health. It does make you a little bit more confident if you're a Suns fan, I guess, that this team looks like, and I hope I'm not jinxing myself or jinxing us here, but that this team looks a little bit more like an established playoff team and not a playoff team on the fringes where they might be more likely to be affected by this sort of thing, you know, where weird sort of scheduling issues could come back and kind of be the difference between being a 7th, 8th seed and a 9th, 10th seed. Again, I hope I'm not jinxing them there. But at least from what we've seen from them so far on the court, it does look like they're not super in danger of that sort of fate.
I agree. I think, you know, what's disappointing about it to me is that the Suns, I had this whole spiel ready for the show or whatever, where I actually do think the Suns have hinted at different things that they're doing to be even more strict than the NBA guidelines. And I think that comes from Monty Williams and just kind of his overall control of things and his ability to earn the trust of his players to get the buy-in on something like that. I don't have specifics because I don't think that they want the specifics to get out, to be completely honest, but they've talked about how they're on a pretty strict lockdown on the road, especially. And I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Paul and his sort of keen understanding of the realities of this situation would be part of why they might buy into that stuff more. And so that was, to me, felt like potentially a panacea for this team, and it did not end up being that because, as we are seeing, you can only do so much yourself, and if you play a two-hour basketball game inside with a bunch of other people, it's going to bite you as well. But I wanted to, yeah, let's get that out of the way. No Pacers game officially announced today by the league, so I will not be spending as much time in downtown Phoenix this week as I initially thought I would. Actually, that would
what are you going to do instead?
Zero time.
Are you going to pick up a new hobby in the next week?
Gosh, probably wallow. Probably just do some. Doesn't it feel like a little bit like when the season first got paused this week? I don't know. That's how it's felt to me.
I mean, I know it's coming back.
It is soon. No, for sure.
So it doesn't feel quite. It doesn't. It doesn't like feel
the,
quite
the, like
that.
The twiddling of the thumbs of like, oh, there's. I guess there's no Suns games anymore.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. And especially for us, but especially for both of us, but especially for you, because I know you put out a podcast much more frequently than I do.
Yeah. Luckily, I'm not going to have to dig back into the 7 seconds or less teams or anything to make do this time around. But let's quickly hit, because we are talking about how good they've been. Let's actually start with the positive part, or actually, I don't know, maybe both things kind of that we wanted to talk about here have two sides to them, but you put out a video on the Timeline YouTube channel today looking at Devin Booker, who is, I think, playing a little bit more of a risky brand of playmaker this year, and you dug into that a little bit, looked at some of his turnovers, looked at maybe why they're happening, his adjustment this year. What did you see as you really dug into this? Because it's something that I think we've all observed, but you were the first person to really look at it thoroughly.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like you said, I don't think it was a super original observation. A lot of people have been talking about Devin Booker. And, you know, what got me to look into it originally, I just kind of wanted a baseline observation of all of the stats after 11 games and to really feel out where Devin Booker is in terms of his role in the current offense. And even though it kind of feels like he's taken a step back in many ways, I was actually surprised to see that Devin Booker is averaging just about the same number of touches, just about the same number of passes made and passes received, and all of those sorts of numbers tracked on the NBA's website next to Chris Paul. But despite that, we've seen his assists cut pretty dramatically from 6.5 to 4.3 per game, and we've seen his turnovers go up. He's averaging almost a career high in 4 turnovers per game. So, you know, it's a small sample size, but I really just wanted to take a closer look at why that might be. And I don't want to spoil the whole video. Obviously, I'd love for people to go on YouTube and watch the video. Yes. But I think there's a number of reasons for it. And I don't think all of them are negative. Certainly, I don't think that this is something that Suns fans should be too dramatically worried about.
No, I don't think so. And I think, you know, to me, like, the playmaking is one thing, but I want to actually bounce this off of you, because I went over it on Monday after they dropped the Wizards game, and I don't know if I was maybe just, you get in like the stats tunnel a little bit where you can convince yourself of something if enough numbers kind of back up the little inkling of something you get in your head.
Totally.
But I do think there's something to the fact that because we like, it's very basic and easy to say that the Suns are a 3-point reliant team. Those types of teams are going to have highs and lows. They're bound to have as many blowouts of good teams as they are losing in kind of horrible fashion to a team like the Wizards, just by the nature of things. But I actually think the 3-point shooting doesn't even get to all of it, because the other part of it is that they're just a jump shot heavy team in general, and their two superstars are very, very, very jump shot heavy, especially this season. Did you know only 18% of Booker's shots this year are coming at the rim?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We kind of always saw it coming, though, didn't we?
Sure.
I guess we saw it, to amend that a little bit, I guess we saw it coming more with Chris Paul than with Devin Booker.
Ooh, yeah. He's been below 10% for like a decade.
Yeah, well, exactly. He loves that little jump stop right in the outside the paint area, that little 10 to 12 foot He'd rather take a step back from that area than just take one more dribble forward and actually go for the layup, for better or worse. And so, you know, I think Chris Paul hasn't exactly been making the shots that we're used to seeing him make yet. And it's set up this entire dynamic between, just to speak on Booker's playmaking, between Paul and Booker, where Booker has only assisted Chris Paul three times through 11 games. And it's a much different dynamic, actually, than he had with Devin Booker did with Ricky Rubio last year. You know, think about how many times, just off the top of your head, can you remember Chris Paul taking a pass from Devin Booker and just shooting a spot up three this year? It's not, it's just not something he really does. To Ricky Rubio's credit, not that he's a good shooter, because we know he's not, but he was a reliable catch and shoot 3-point guy last year. Actually, I think he shot close
pretty much league average.
Yeah, I think he shot close to 40%. I'd have to look it up on catch and shoot threes. I might be wrong. If my memory tells me, he was just a really bad pull-up shooter, but pretty solid on the catch and shoots. And so right there, you know, one thing I talk about in the video, right there, maybe half an assist per game, maybe as much as one assist per game of Booker's drop this year can just be explained by that. It's just explained by the relationship, the difference in relationship with Chris Paul versus Ricky Rubio. But then there's a lot more intricate stuff that kind of explains the rest of the difference.
It just, in a lot of ways, feels, I mean, it's very kind of simplistic, obviously, to say that they haven't gotten it figured out, because neither of them have been at their best. You just gave us some statistics that show that they haven't sort of played off of one another to an awesome degree yet, even close to like the kind of your turn, my turn stuff we saw from Harden and Paul. We haven't even really seen that, although the Suns don't play that way. But it's just sort of interesting. I think the reason that I gravitate towards some of those, like where they're getting their shots and why that can pose a challenge, is because I just think it does sort of play into the, there's just been this idea that like, yeah, the Suns have been sort of uneven and inconsistent over their first month or so now, but that, oh, well, you know, but we haven't seen Paul and Booker at their best. And part of me just feels like there is a little bit of a built-in limitation on what, like, that those guys are going to dig you out of a hole within the context of one game, because I just don't necessarily know. I mean, I don't know if Paul is a player you want to be putting that into that position. Yep. And Booker has just had this adjustment where he hasn't really been up to that task yet either. And so we are getting to a point where it's like, you know, maybe this adjustment is going to take a little while those two guys figure it out. And maybe you can't rely on them to say, oh, well, we can afford to get down by 8 to 10 points because we have these guys. I just don't think that's really shown itself to be true so far.
Well, I will say, traditionally, I think you can count on Chris Paul to take on that task of being one of those guys. That being said, you can't wait forever this season for them to wake up. I mean, we're still in the small sample size phase. 11 games is not panic mode yet. But if it's another 10 or 15 games and Chris Paul still doesn't look like Chris Paul, not that the Suns are going to do anything especially drastic, but if the Suns' defense is so good, if this top five, top 10, more like top 10 now, if we're being honest, but if this top 10 defense is for real and sustainable throughout the course of a long season, and we're coming up on halfway through the year and the Suns still look like a solid playoff team, maybe if Chris Paul's not getting it done, it means priority number one at the trade deadline is bring in a guy who can put the ball on the floor and get to the free throw line. Another guy off the bench. Now, I haven't even begun to identify potential targets. That's a much easier said than done thing. But you have to wonder if the Suns 7-4 start has at all accelerated in James Jones's mind this team's ability to make a deep playoff run. I mean, he's always talked with a certain level of confidence about believing that this team can compete for a championship. But that's sort of just something that every GM says, and you don't ever really know if they believe it. It's possible that they've even caught him off guard a little bit, and he's more willing to make a move towards contention if he sees one. And just if he does that seems like the biggest need to me right now for Phoenix is just one more guy who can get to the free throw line, put the ball on the floor, and have a little bit of creative abilities when neither Paul nor Booker are on the floor, and you want
to
help out.
The one thing to me that I will say is like a little bit of a red flag early for Paul is the last time we saw him in the bubble, he was just torching Robert Covington off switches, pulling up in his face, supremely confident, getting that shot off, knowing he was going to make it, knowing what spot to get to. He just was in a zone in the bubble that I don't necessarily think is fair to expect of him, but we have seen him avoid those types of situations a little bit. And that's one thing where if that's not a part of a game that part of his game that feels super comfortable for him right now, then that does sort of change the calculus for me. But like you said, it's easier said than done. And like Jordan Clarkson's bank account is an example of how hard or how valuable at least that position can be. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see if it is truly a need, if Paul does sort of return to the guy we've come to believe he is and was just a few months ago in the Orlando bubble. But let's take a quick break and dive into another sort of, I don't know if it's divisive, but another flashpoint I think we could be facing in the season between some of the front court pieces here on the Suns right after this. A quick break to tell you guys about the first sponsor of today's show, which is Bet Online. Who is ready for some football? Divisional round, just 24 hours away as you guys listen to this. Coming out of this weekend, we will have a clarity on championship weekend, the Super Bowl. It'll all be much clearer than it is right now as we have the old guard in the NFC, the young guard in the AFC. To get in on all the action, there is only one place that has you covered, and only one place we trust here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, the name of our network, for your 50% welcome bonus. As always, guys, my bet of the day from BetOnline is about the Brooklyn Nets. Believe it or not, BetOnline already has odds for how far the Nets will go in the 2021 NBA playoffs. And believe it or not, you can also get pretty good odds on the Nets winning the finals. That's actually the third most likely scenario here. You get plus 300 odds on the Nets winning the finals. That's actually pretty solid. If you think that this is going to flame out, you can get plus 900 odds on them losing in the first round. I like both of those. Losing the finals plus 150, that's no fun. Betting on them to get all the way there and then losing, no thank you. Not very good odds and less fun. So hit that plus 300 to win the finals or plus 900 to lose in the first round. Have some fun. Bet on this potential train wreck, potential awesome team, whatever you think they are. There's a bet for you. So get in on the action. Do not sit on the sidelines. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive that 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. All right, back here with Sam Cooper of the Timeline Podcast and the Bright Side of the Sun. I wanted to bring you on initially, Sam, to talk about Dario Saric. So let's dive into Dario. I do feel like he is either on some sort of minutes limit still or potentially just straight up a backup to DeAndre Ayton and facing the sort of minutes repercussions that come along with that. But I think I looked and those two guys have only played 33 non-garbage time possessions together per Cleaning the Glass. It's not really a look we saw Monty go to until the past couple of weeks, but in his own right, when he's been maybe the only big on the floor, especially, Dario has really looked good and honestly looked like the bubble guy that we got used to back last summer.
He's been amazing. I'm glad you brought me on to talk about Dario because unfortunately, I think the timing isn't perfect. I think his last couple games haven't been amazing. Sure. So I don't know if Suns fans are feeling as high about him as they were a week ago.
Did not tell the story. I feel like he's actually pretty decent in that game. He just didn't make shots.
Yeah. And I mean, look, overall, small sample size on everything, but he's the net rating king so far. He's a plus 19 per 100 possessions. That's fantastic. Serving as the Suns' backup center. 20.2 points, 8.7 rebounds, 1.9 assists per 36 minutes on 58% true shooting. For a guy with his athletic limitations, let's just be real. That's why it's fun to talk about Dario Saric, and that's why it's fun to watch him. What gives me so much pleasure out of watching Dario, currently I'm threading together this one giant thread that I'm going to keep going on my Twitter account of just every time he gets someone with a pump fake. Mm. because he's gotten into this consistent pattern this season of if Dario Saric tries to challenge someone who maybe has 2 or 3 inches and 20 pounds on him and he goes straight up, he gets blocked because he is not an athletic player. But if he hits them with a pump fake first, sometimes even two, he finds ways to worm his way in there and he just finds the right spots. And I don't know. He always finds a way, and he's just a fascinating player to watch because he shouldn't be that good, but he is. And so, you know, he's been a critical piece for the Suns bench so far.
It's kind of ridiculous when you think that he's only 26, because when we first heard about Dario Saric, it was the guy who, as process lovers in Minnesota will joke, he was never going to come over, right? That's the whole thing with Dario, that he was never going to come over. He was such a waste of a pick by Sam Hinkie. And then, of course, he does and nearly wins Rookie of the Year and then becomes part of the super spaced lineup that goes on like a 17-game winning streak and puts the Sixers in their first playoff berth under the process era. So it feels like that whole thing combined with just how many teams he's been on, you would think he's older, and he's really just entering his prime.
That feels like ancient history now.
Right? But it wasn't.
That season, and it was only 3 years ago. Yeah, it's crazy.
And so
it's crazy.
He feels like a guy where he is just really, like, you were watching him realize what he can be in the NBA, and that's what sticks out to me from the bubble till now, really since he got back into the rotation, like just before the shutdown, through the bubble up until now. It just feels like so much, especially like fire Ryan Saunders into the Sun, because that guy almost ruined Dario Saric. He was using him as a spot up guy, and he just looks comfortable now.
Yeah, look, Ryan Saunders was wrong to do that, but also, I almost can't blame him.
I just don't.
What'd you say?
No, I said also just not a very good coach, but that's
no, he's not a very good coach
to say in this context.
No, he's not a very good coach. However, this isn't it kind of unprecedented what we're doing with Dario? I mean, we should just take a look and recognize that. I wanna give Monty Williams some respect for what he's doing, because when Monty Williams came in to coach the Phoenix Suns, I remember I went back and looked at tape from the last time Monty Williams had been a head coach, which was most recently before his stint in Phoenix, the 2014-15 season with the Pelicans. And I went back and looked, and in 2014-15, Monty Williams still had Ryan Anderson, who at the time was maybe the best spot-up shooting big man in the league. He had him shooting like 18-foot elbow mid-range jumpers.
Oh my gosh,
that's where the league was. He had plays designed with Ryan Anderson coming off a pin down to shoot an 18-foot elbow jumper. That's where the league was 5 years ago. So the rapid shift that we've had from that being the case 5 years ago to the three-point revolution, where suddenly you want every big who it seems like they can kind of shoot a three to shoot a three, ultimately culminating in what we're seeing today, where Monty Williams is playing Dario Saric primarily as a backup center. It's just been very rapid, the change. And so I don't necessarily blame Ryan Saunders, because I think honestly a lot of coaches would have tried to use Dario the same way. I'm just glad that it was a collective decision between Dario himself and the coaching staff, that both parties agreed this was the right role for him. This was where he felt comfortable. And yeah, I mean, we haven't heard anything from either side about this being something that could potentially hurt the team's locker room or the chemistry in any way. Because that was my initial worry about it, was this is a guy who he probably wants a starting role. He wants more minutes. He wants more touches. He's not going to accept this benching. And as a matter of fact, he seems to embrace the role really in a professional way.
I think Dario is the kind of guy who, not that assuming that generally would be wrong, because that totally makes sense. He just got the stability of a second contract here and has accomplished more than, as little as he's accomplished, it's more than the majority of the players on the Suns roster. So all that's fair, but really, really, after covering this guy for 2 years now, like, I genuinely believe that he wants to be in a situation where he's comfortable, empowered, happy, has good teammates that care and value him, and just winning. Like, I think that I point to that Minnesota process for him as well, no pun intended, because I really think that made him rethink things. Like, he refers to like the challenges that he went through in Minnesota. Like, he'll say kind of offhanded stuff that you obviously can kind of read between the lines on, and he really, really, I think, gravitated toward Monty, and I think that's a maybe underrated part of why the Suns felt comfortable making that trade on draft night a couple years ago, because those two clearly had a relationship in Philly. And it just feels like I said, he just feels and looks comfortable right now. And it's not even just the shooting, like the fact that he can put the ball on the ground, the pump fakes you were talking about. Like, he knows what he's capable of. He knows what he can do on an NBA court and how to function within this team and this system at just a really high level. And so he's probably, like we've all kind of come to understand, like, he's a backup center, and he probably should be playing a little bit more than he is on this team, in my opinion, especially with DeAndre being so inconsistent. But, you know, that, you know, he's probably a 20 to 22 minute a game guy at his peak, and he's going to give you, like, 12 and 5 in those minutes, and he's going to be really, really solid and efficient when he does it. And so that's just a useful thing to have, making not much money in the NBA. And I just think he's a little bit, he just goes under the radar because he is so kind of diligent and is just goes out there and does his thing. But can we talk about his defense for a second too?
Yes, because that's where I wanted to bring up, good, I feel like at this point for a backup. I have a crazy stat. It's a small sample size stat, but do you want to hear it?
I would love to.
So first of all, Dario Saric, I'm going to make this a little bit interactive, so I'm going to force you to guess some stuff. Dario Saric has played 127 minutes this season through seven games. Can you guess how many blocks he has?
127 minutes.
In seven games, how many blocks does Dario Saric have as the Suns' backup center?
15.
It was 15 blocks in seven games? Are you sure?
I don't know.
Are you sure? He has one. The answer is...
I thought it was high. I thought it was just going to be higher than I... So I just went like, let me just blow it out of the water. No, I didn't actually think it would be 15.
Well, stay with me here. So Dario Saric, who you have joked with me before, guy who can't jump over a credit card. Because we know that's true. I mean, if that weren't true, he wouldn't have to do all those pump fakes on offense in the first place. Athletically a limited guy. One block in seven games. Now... what percentage is Dario Saric holding his opponents to within 6 feet of the rim, 6 feet of the basket so far this season?
55.
49. Actually, wrong. 48. 48.1%. League average is 60%. League average is guys shoot 60% within 6 feet of the basket. DeAndre Ayton, who has played very well defensively, is holding his opponents to 49%. Dario Saric has one block all season long, and he is holding his opponents to shooting 48% within 6 feet of the basket. I can't stress, first of all, it's a small sample size. I fully expect that to regress, because you can only go so long not blocking shots before that type of stat catches up to you. Those two things directly correlate. You get more blocks, you force more misses at the rim. That's just how it works. So what we're seeing,
and the game plan is going to start to be, well, when Ayton's not in there, go at the rim. You know, teams maybe don't have that yet.
Right. But so far, just with what we've seen so far, we have seen a hilarious statistical oddity from Dario, where to allow 48% shooting at the rim makes, at least in through the first seven games or however many games he's played, makes Dario for now like one of the best rim protectors in the NBA by that stat. And he has one block all season long. Now, part of it is just, you know, luck, and it's going to regress back a little bit because he's not actually that good of a defender. However, to give him credit, his verticality, I think, is really good. And I think he's gotten a lot better since he started playing center just in the past several months for the Suns at staying vertical and not committing fouls, at least in a egregiously stupid way.
Agreed. I think I was mentioning how I think the stats underestimated him a little bit in the Pacers game. And in that third quarter, I genuinely think there was a stretch there where he outplayed Miles Turner when they went big in the second half against Indiana. I felt like, and then they went away from Ayton, and it was just Saric in there, and he stopped Turner, I think, on an inside basket. He was stretching him out, making Turner work. Like, that guy's the defensive player of the year front runner right now. And Dario came in and just played his game like it was nothing. And I think we'll see, hopefully, just because I want the Suns to be smarter, I want to see them go to Saric a little bit more, not be beholden to Ayton getting his 30 to 34 minutes just because whatever. I don't even know what the reason would necessarily be. Mm-hmm. So They will be better on certain nights with Šarić in there at the five, even maybe closing games. Like, I don't think now that his injury seems to be behind him that we should be sort of married to that perception, because on both ends, he really is getting it done. He's not a liability. I mean, he is in certain ways, but so is Ayton, right?
They exactly.
both have their good and bad on defense.
You've got different sorts of strategies that are going to work better with either guy. Like, for instance, the Pistons game where they played zone and everyone freaked out about how the Suns couldn't beat a zone and they lost by a few points. That was a game where maybe Dario could have closed and the Suns would have won the game because he would have put a greater emphasis on getting elbow touches and putting the ball on the floor and trying to break the zone. That's just one example of how it might work. Not necessarily going to be a thing you want to do frequently, but I do think in certain situations you shouldn't be afraid to do it if you think he's good enough that it could win you the game.
Yep, and we've seen, you know, Monty's not necessarily afraid to do things like that to win games. It does just seem like there's a little bit of a organizational block on things like that, which is maybe a different podcast, but we can probably cut the Šarić talk there. We probably could do an entire timeline pod length show just on Dario. See, you said we didn't have 30 minutes. We've already done like 15, so we probably could have gotten just a whole Dario show in. But let's take a quick break, and then we're going to have some fun, talk broader NBA because there is no Suns to talk about here, and pick our very, very early all-star team in the Western Conference. We'll be back right after this. Closing out the show here with Sam Cooper of the Timeline Pod and Bright Side of the Sun. And I was thinking about how we could make this show a little looser, have some fun, because I'm a little sad to not be going to the Suns games this week. So to cheer things up, we're going to pick Western Conference All-Star teams. My first question is, it feels really hard right now to not, at least we're going to pick the starters. It feels really hard right now not to pick CJ McCollum. That guy is like, whether it's the Harden trade rumors or just like being tired of being out in the first round, I don't know, but he's playing with a purpose right now.
I know it's a Suns podcast, but so I had to, like, it feels really hard to justify the Suns having an all-star right now as things currently stand, because in the backcourt, at least Steph Curry is back with a vengeance. Luka Doncic is still Luka Doncic. And then you've got both Dame and CJ deserve a spot for the way they're playing. So to make the case for either Chris Paul or Devin Booker, I mean, like, if we're just being honest, the Suns are seven.
You're skipping the most deserved player so far, and he plays the three for the Suns.
Who am I skipping? Oh, well, that's what I was going to say. Okay, Mikal Bridges, advanced stats-wise, has been the best Sun. He's been maybe the biggest reason why they're winning games narrowly over a couple of other guys. But he's averaging 15 and 5, Brendan. You know, like, I love him, but even if the Suns are good, we can be honest and say a guy averaging 15 and 5 probably isn't making the All-Star game, right? But so if the voters are going to give it to anyone, I guess they'd give it to Booker, but if he plays like this, he doesn't deserve it. You know,
I would melt if Mikal Bridges ever made an all-star team.
Oh, so would I.
The host of the show would need to be, they'd need to find somebody else, because I would be a pile of goop on the floor.
It's just, it's really difficult. Like, you know, has Devin Booker been better than Donovan Mitchell so far?
I think so.
Maybe. I think that one's arguable, but he certainly hasn't been better than CJ. And, to be fair,
I've only watched Utah the one time they played the Suns. I'm kind of bored by the Jazz. I don't make an appointment out of watching them very often. But okay, so let's break it down, because I think Jokic has to be the five, right?
100%.
It's almost not a question. He might be the MVP favorite right now. Maybe not favorite, but he might be the 10-game MVP here. I just feel like Davis and LeBron have to be the three and the four.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument for Kawhi. There's always an argument for Kawhi at the three.
And PG's been pretty awesome for them too.
Yeah, it's again, man, it's like, I would love Mikal Bridges to make an all-star team, but where is he making it over Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis? And, you know,
the names of the players.
Exactly. It's like, these guys they're locks. They're just locks. Like, the Suns would have to go on a 15-game winning streak right now, and then maybe Mikal Bridges averaging 16 points per game makes the all-star team. But yeah, so I think I'd probably bank on it being a Kawhi LeBron front court, and then Anthony Davis might be a reserve. I'm not sure. Don't hold me to it.
Bridges is 16th in win shares so far, tied with Paul George.
Right.
And just below Kawhi Leonard. But he's by far the best on the Suns.
Yeah, advanced stats-wise, he's a top 24 player, which is why this isn't fair. But, like, name me the last... Don't give me an Eastern Conference example, because we know the East is weak. Like, Kyle Korver doesn't count. Who was the last All-Star in the Western Conference to average 15 points per game or less, who was not, like, a legacy selection? You know, like, oh, it's Tim Duncan's last year, so we're just going to give it to him because. Like, who was the last young player?
I don't even think anybody. I mean, I think Steve Nash? Probably. If you gave the list just of like total players in NBA history, non-point guards who haven't scored 20 a game and made the, or 18 a game and made the All-Star team, like, yeah, it's not going to happen, but it's fun to dream. And he has been, I think, the most valuable two-way player on this team so far. So I would like an honorary spot for him. If D'Angelo Russell can make the All-Star team for a sub 500 Nets team, I think Bridges should get some consideration. Move the Suns to the East is what I'm saying. But
absolutely.
let's go to the guards, because I think, yeah, some combination, Jokic at the five, and then the two LA forwards on either side is probably what we're looking at right
now.
Okay,
so that's already five
when,
guys.
When things are, well, yeah, but we're going to go positionally because sure. I think that's how the starters are still selected. No, it's not. Never mind. That has changed, but that's more fun. So CJ, Dame, I'm looking just at win shares, and there's actually a little bit of a drop-off. I'm not saying that that's the end-all be-all, but it's interesting to see how few Western Conference guards there are. We have James Harden.
James Harden left. So that's...
True.
That's,
he can't be named. But Luka, like you said, and Steph.
Well, so Luka, Steph, CJ, and Dame. The first three of those... Dame, Luka, and Curry, we can admit that they're locks. CJ, if he keeps playing like he is, and I'm skeptical, but I have to be honest, like I've slandered CJ McCollum in the past, and he's really proving me wrong this season because I didn't see him averaging 28 points per game at all. So if he can keep doing that.
He does have these spurts. He did it in the 2019 playoffs.
Yeah, he deserves the fourth spot as of now for sure. But there's at least a fifth guard spot. James Harden's gone. Ja Morant is injured. I'm trying to think of anyone else who could even like be in the running. I think it's
okay. Devin, so who are the four that you have? CJ, Dame, Luka, and Steph.
Yeah. I'm talking about who's the fifth guy after that. The obvious one is Booker versus Mitchell. It's one of those, unless you can think of a more deserving fifth.
I think with that type of thing, I'm to the point where I was like the last holdout, and I deserve the trashing from fans that I got about this. But for a while, I did still maintain that Mitchell, having performed at a high level in the playoffs, put him over Booker for me. Booker's just better than Mitchell. And so I just feel like when they're kind of relatively similar and the teams are similarly successful, like... I probably would go with Booker over Mitchell. I mean, I don't even honestly have a good grasp on what Mitchell's numbers are this season.
I would go Booker over Mitchell because I think he's a better player, and because I think projecting over the next 20 games, Booker's going to get his game together a little bit. But it's not, as of now, it's not a lock. When you're averaging 23 points per game but four turnovers like Devin Booker, you know, it's not a lock yet. But I think those are the five spots. Those are the five guard spots for sure.
Mitchell has five assists to three turnovers.
Yeah.
Nothing special. I don't know. 42% from the field. I don't know. He seems to have hit a little bit of a ceiling. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm going too far in the other direction. He's certainly worthy and is going to be in consideration here, but I agree with you. If the Suns are good, if Booker gets it together a little bit more, I think that the league feels similarly to how I do, where they would lean Booker over Mitchell.
Now, the other thing that I'm thinking of, jumping back to forwards for a second, so the LA forwards are locks. That's four guys right there.
Yep.
I'm still just trying to think, is there like an outside chance that someone from the Suns makes it? But realistically, there's probably more of a chance that if they go with anyone after those guys, it's going to be like Brandon Ingram or Zion, right? Like, we got to throw those two in the mix.
Yeah, Ingram is a good call. I'm looking, too, though, and, like, once again this season, Paul George is technically the starting two for the Clippers, and he was last year too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't remember how they categorized him in the All-Star thing last
season.
Maybe
my guy.
Technically, he is this. You know, Beverly is the only real guard on the.
My guy Christian Wood is another name that comes to mind. You know, if you're talking about who just deserves a 12th or 13th spot, he's
Keldon Johnson.
Keldon Johnson. I mean, yeah, Keldon Johnson.
It's not super out of the realm of possibility.
If Suns fans are going to prop up Mikal Bridges, Spurs fans deserve to prop up Keldon Johnson because he has been as good. So, I mean, like, how weird would that be, right? Let's say the Suns have twice as many wins as they do losses at the All-Star break, and they don't have an All-Star. Based on what we're saying right now, it sounds like a totally conceivable possibility for this year.
I think there's just going to be an urge to reward the Suns. But if they keep playing the way that they have, Booker and Paul, they might not earn it. But assuming we do see some sort of positive improvement, regression from those two guys, one of them, I just feel like the Suns are going to be such a story if they keep this up that, like, voting for Mitchell or CJ McCollum, it's like, yeah, we've seen that before. You know, nobody's excited about that.
I lean towards the idea that one of them, not both, but one of Paul or Booker gets in and plays like, you know, like if Chris Paul gets in, it's going to be his millionth All-Star game and he's going to play like 10 minutes and Curry and Luka are going to play like 30, you know, that's going to be the sort of the backcourt configuration. If Booker gets in, he'll play a little bit more of an involved role.
Okay. So let's get it on the record here as we sit, basically 3 weeks into the NBA season, far before this voting even begins. Who between Paul and Booker, as far as what we know now, would you bet on being the representative?
I'm going to say Devin Booker, because
I think that's where you
gotta
go.
They reward scoring, and I think Chris Paul's going to start scoring a little bit more. But based on his role in the offense, it really feels like he's going to be more of a 15, 16 point per game guy at best. And Devin Booker has a much higher ceiling in terms of how high he can go if he can, you know, just kind of keep the turnover numbers down a little bit, keep getting in the free throw line, maybe hit his three-pointers with a little bit more precision. I know we ask that from Devin Booker every year, and it never happens. And so, like,
speaking of things that are other podcasts.
At a certain point, we sort of just have to accept the fact that Devin Booker is probably not a 40% three-point shooter like we want him to be, and that's okay. You know, he can still be an amazing mid-range killer and a great inside finisher and whatnot. But yeah, if anyone's going to start heating up and scoring those 30-plus point games that build the narrative towards an All-Star appearance, it's definitely Devin Booker.
I have a sort of, it's not even a theory, but it's just, I believe that Booker winning the three-point contest saved him in terms of, it's a go-to whenever the Suns get written and talked about by basketball analysts that they can say, oh, and Booker won the three-point contest, or like three-point contest winner Devin Booker. That's like a way to describe him as a good shooter without actually having to back it up, because any number, if you look at it as an overview, you'd be hard-pressed to put him in the same class as some of these other shooters. And that's not a knock on him. He does everything else incredibly well. But it is funny every time I see that, I'm like, they went through the same thought process that I did when I occasionally have to try to make the case that Devin Booker is an elite shooter and don't have like an awesome way to prove that. But I agree with you. He will score better. He will improve. Everyone go check out Sam's video breaking Devin Booker's playmaking down as we go through a little break without Suns basketball. Hopefully we will have more to talk with everyone about by Monday with Brandon. Like we do every Monday. We won't have a game, but we might have a game that night. So cross your fingers. Hopefully nobody gets sick here. And Sam, thank you for coming on. You can follow him at S Cooper Hoops. You can listen to him at The Timeline, and you can read him at Bright Side of the Sun. Let's collaborate again soon, Sam. We shouldn't go so many months without you.
Of course.
You being
appreciate
on.
You again for having me on.